Mr. Swan, reel two.
Where was the gun situated, going back to Bexley Heath?
The gun was situated at the end of the car park, away from the public house, with a line of fire along the road, which went over the railway and over the outer anti-tank defence ditch of London. Now, the instructions were that the moment we got into Action Station, we should load the gun and be ready to fire. And this we did. And it so happened that I had a number of conscripts with me who had never seen action, or possibly never heard shell fire, or know anything about shells. And when I came back from really the officer in charge, and I said, we've got to go back, we must now unload the gun. The charge came out all right, but the question of getting the shell out, having been well rammed in to the piece, required someone to go to the front of the gun and with a shell ejector push the shell out. And I said to two or three of the gunners, now be ready when I push the shell out. Oh, first, I said to one of those, no, use the ejector. And they don't think, really didn't know what to do. So I said, okay, I'll do it, but you get ready to catch it when it comes out, because it will come out quite sharpish. And so I went at the other end and pushed, and I felt it free itself. It was a hell of a clatter. They dropped it, and they jumped off. They jumped off the flat base of the of the vehicle, which the thing was going to go off. Of course, it couldn't. There were various safety devices within the shells. It's very nice until they're fired, and the centrifugal force opens up some ribbon, which releases the cap, as it were, to fire the mechanism. So that was just an aside, as it were, just one of those little incidents that happened, and amusing at the time to me, but to those lads, it was very serious. You know, they saw the shell suddenly come out and they dropped it and landed with a hell of a clatter on a quarter-inch steel base.
Just going back to South Cave in the East Riding, do you have any memories there from the anti-parachute duties?
Not really. We went out on night patrols. It was more or less a walking brief, because I suppose in a way you could call it something like Dad's Army. We were there, we were in tents, probably only 10% of us had got rifles, but we went out, as I say, on a watching brief, and of course the pubs were there.
Whereabouts in South or North Cave were you, actually?
I can't remember.
You're in tents in the field?
Yes, in South Cave, yes. And one of the batteries was in North Cave too.
So I interrupted you with you going to East Anglia after Bexley Heath.
Yes, that's right. We went to the area round about South Waltham, and our battery was on the Rollsby Broad in the Rollsby Workhouse, as it was. The whole troop was there. And I was fortunate to have my gun in what would have been the garage, so it was always kept clean and tidy, whereas the other three guns were actually in the field, so well camouflaged. And by this time, I should have mentioned that we've got 25 pounders, the Mark II, and what a wonderful gun they were. And when we used to set up the gun for direct firing as a sort of rifle, we used to put crosswires on the muzzle of the gun and through the firing pin hole line it up on some distant object. And I remember that the object we chose was the spire of Martham Parish Church, Marthamville on the coast. And our gun position was just outside Rollsby Workhouse, where there was, of those trees, about 4 or 5 yards wide, and we dug our own positions into this belt of trees so that we screened from the air. And we covered the coast at in Norfolk from Caister, near the British Islands, up to Martham. That was our field of fire. And we did a number of schemes there in case we had to move out and move elsewhere. But basically, we were there, we had patrols out, we had sort of sentries out at night over the guns, using episodes there. I remember that our officer in charge there had a marvellous 2.2 rifle, and he said I could borrow it. And I came off sentry duty one night, one morning about 5 o'clock, went out with a 2.2, and there was a pheasant in the field about 50 yards away, and I was behind a hedge, and I took a shot, and one of those fruits hit it in the neck and it killed it. So I nipped over the hedge and gave it to the officers for their supper one night. Now it so happens that we were against some allotments, that's our council house tenants close to us, and the allotments were well cultivated. One of the chaps, used to go in for prize marrows, and the officers backed me, and was friendly with one of the girls of the family, and the father said to him, "Oh, if the officers want a marrow, just go up and help yourself." And he told him which allotment. Unfortunately, he went up and he got the wrong allotment and took someone else's prize marrow off as a nearby allotment, whereupon the local constabulary came up a day or so later and said, "I understand your men have been stealing prize marrows." And so we called. The officer called the batman and said, "What have you been doing?" He said, "Well, I received instructions from Mr. So and so." Anyway, they investigated it on the spot, as it were, and they came to the conclusion that it was a clear mistake. It was a sad mistake, nevertheless, a mistake. And just as the constable was going out of the room, he said to the officer, "Oh, by the way, sir, I wouldn't let your men go around shooting pheasants first thing in the morning. He was seen by the milkman." I know it was funny. Anyway, that was our stay in the area around South Walton. And we had a marvellous observation post in a tree on the coast at Caister. And we did erected some steel scaffolding inside the tree so that it couldn't be seen and it was easy to climb, near to a house which, even in our brief stay there, was gradually subsiding into the sea. All the holiday chalets had been raised to the ground for fear of fire, and it's very, very close to what is known as the Caister Motor Museum. From the old street, we did many a scheme in the area, and eventually went down to Rustington, in near to Sleaford. The Rebecca headquarters was in Sleaford. The regiment headquarters was at Lass in Lincolnshire. And we, as I say, were at. I just said it.
Rustington.
Rustington, that's right. Where we had to run to the public baths of the Poor Law Institution, about a mile and a half away, and have our bath and then come back in the vehicles. which was quite good fun, really. It was good to be out and running. Did lots of exercises, and in certain parts of the winter, we helped with potato picking and swede pulling and so on. I went on a signalling course while I was there, and the inevitable call came. We were then shipped from Ruskington up to Liverpool, where we went out to India.
You left, I think you said, in March 42?
Yes, March 42, yes.
This is, you're still with the same unit?
Yes, still with the 150th Field Regiment, yes.
Anything happened on the voyage? Did you run into the enemy?
We of course, going out to, we couldn't go through the canal, the Suez Canal, so we went almost out to Newfoundland in Canada, and swung around and came up to West Africa at Freetown in Sierra Leone, where we stood offshore for about 3 days. We then had another long trip down to Cape Town, where we stayed for 3 days and were given shore leave. And it so happened that the regiment had got a very fine rugby team. And the rugby team, I don't know how the colonel did it, but he persuaded the captain to let the rugby team play Stellenbosch University. And of course, they wiped the floor with us because we hadn't had any practice for some time. But nevertheless, it was a wonderful outing. And the rugby team went on. Of course, eventually we went down to Ceylon for a period of time, and we won. We were in the finals of the Ceylon Rugby Tournament, and I was a member of that team in the play there. But on the way out, as we say, we called it Cape Town. Then we went en route for Bombay, and we had some engine trouble. And of course, the rules of the combo were that Congo must go on, and the ship must stay behind. Luckily, the engines were repaired, and we did hear that submarines were looking about in that area, but we didn't really have any problems. We landed at Bombay and went down to Bangalore, where we was accommodated in a seminary. The colonel of the regiment, a very fine man, was very keen on discipline and also ceremonial. We had a trumpet band, or rather a bugle band, and drums, and an aside would be that when we left Southampton for France in 1940, they played out, rolled out the barrel on the top deck, much to the dismay of the old soldiers who were with us. But here, we had proper guard mounting parades in Bangalore, right from the battery inspections to the regimental inspections and finally the colonel's inspection. And this happened every night of our stay in Bangalore. While there, certain officers and sergeants were invited to have tea with the Maharaja of Bangalore. Mysore, yes. And that was very interesting to sort of sample sweetmeats for the first time. Then that was uneventful, really. We were training, marching, and counter-marching. Drill, don't fight the guards, I suppose. But whilst I'd been in England, I had taken a 3 months course in physical training at the police college at Hendon, and I got my crossed swords and was entitled to have called myself Assistant Physical Training Instructor, APTI. And it was at Bangalore that I was asked by the colonel to put the men through their paces, they were getting slack and fat. And one of my friends in Leicester remember now of coming back one night feeling under the weather, and the next morning I was up at 6:30 on the parade ground, and my picking him out and saying, "Now you must bend lower than that, Sergeant so and so." And he said, "Even now, I could have cursed you, Swami, making me bend down there. My head was going all over the place." But no, it's a good time. And from then on, we went back to Bombay and then down to Ceylon. And our arrival at Colombo was very good. The regiment was all over the place. Our battery was still. Was in fact staying at a place called Harana towards the south coast.
Did you know what you were preparing for at this stage?
No, only that we were getting acclimatised and getting ready for the battles with the Japs, I suppose.
Were you part of a division by now?
Oh yes, well, I really couldn't tell you, I've forgotten that. I could do research on it and tell you, but...
No, that's all right.
We were certainly training, very much so, in Ceylon. We had demonstrated to us the marvellous firepower of the 25-pounder, because in gunnery, particularly if you're doing a surveyed barrage, your guns have got to be absolutely accurate. And they did muzzle velocity tests on the salt flats at Hambantota, which is right on the south coast. And the system was to fire by order. That is, the observation post would give the order to fire, and the moment you fired, you loaded your gun ready for the next instruction. And the surveyors would be surveying the fall of shot from their positions, so that they could calculate just how far the gun was out, either in line or in range. Because with gunnery, certainly the 25-pounders, there is what they call a 100% zone, which if you think of an elongated egg with a line across the centre, and the centre point is the target, you will have 50% of the shells fall in the top half and 50% fall in the bottom half. And in each half, 25% will fall in the bottom half, and then under the line, 25% will fall in the first part. So if this adds up, it's probably right. It's 2, 7, 19, 25 times twice. So at the extreme ends of the oval, there are two shells and four. Then there'll be 7, then there'll be 19, then there'll be 25. And it's these 2 25s together which is called the 50% zone. And if you're going to get accurate on firing onto a target, you've got to get your 50% zone on that target. And that's what gun ranging is about. But part of this testing muzzle velocity and so on is to calibrate the guns so that you know exactly where they're falling. And then if you have to do a barrage, fire a barrage, the surveyors can plot you in, and they know exactly if there's a distance of 100 yards between the guns, either forward or backwards or sideways. They can allow for that so that they can say, well, given the meteorological conditions, the guns will fall on that target. That's what it says. And in doing barrages, of course, one has to take into account wind speed at ground level, wind speed in the air, the barometric pressure, and so on, wind direction. So this was done at Hambantota, and we started firing, fired off 2 shots, and the OP rang back and said, "I say fire," and "I say again fire," and the gun position officer said, "Shot 2, already fired, sir." No sign, you see. And in fact, what's happened, out of about 10 shells that particular gun fired, about 3 were falling in the same hole. So accurate was it, you see. So it opened our eyes to the efficiency of the 25-pounder, and I think it's an absolute marvellous gun. I'm sorry it's no longer being used. So from And Bantota, I was, we went back to Havana, and it was the day after Christmas Day when, by tradition, the sergeants wait on the men with the Christmas lunch.
This is 42, by the way.
42, yes. And it was the day after that, we were feeling a little despondent because we'd been too liberal with our helping, the sergeants got nothing. But the next day, we were, four of us were told we'd been summoned to go to Octu. And I left on New Year's Day for Belgium to go to Octu. And then, having done 3 months at Belgium, being trained with infantry tactics and weapon training, found MT training, we then went on to Deer Marley, the gunners up to. And those of you who have seen the days on the television, boy, does it bring back memories.
It ain't half hot, Mum.
Yes, you've seen that television play.
Yeah,
it's marvellous. But we, of course, being gunners and having been gunners for some time, what we learned at Deer Marley was really the officer end to the situation. We knew the guns, we knew the shells, we knew the different types of fuses and so on, and ranging and so on, but there was just that final point on work at the OP, as it were. And so eventually I was commissioned in mid-June, and after a fortnight's holiday I was sent to join a regiment at Chittagong, the 160th Jungle Field Regiment, which at that stage had 3.7 gun howitzers, pack mounted. They could be taken anywhere in the jungle on mules. Then, after a brief space of time, we were given 25 pounders, which was very interesting because most of the regiment hadn't seen these, but of course I'd been firing at firing camps and was fully au fait with the gun. And we then went to Cox's Bazaar, which is further along from the eastward from Chittagong, and very close to the Arakan, where one of the troops was in action, one of the troops from the battery was in action, and we were in first reserve. And then, after a while, the troop in the Arakan was pulled out, and we all moved back to Chittagong, where we were always adjusted for other duties. But it was while at Cox's Bazaar that one of those unfortunate incidents occurred, which in the event wasn't fatal at all, but could have been. And that is that the colonel of the regiment was acting brigadier for a time, and a new infantry regiment was in fact brought into the brigade, and the colonel wished to show off his gunners, just show the infantry people how good the gunners were. And at Chittagong, the hills are very close together, and the valleys are very close together, and the colonel took the infantry brigade commander and the battalion commanders up to the observation post, and he fired at different targets with live shells, of course, and he said to us beforehand that he would record the targets, which we did. I had a bombardier who was a very fine chap, but he was rather short-sighted. He got those thick glasses, and he wasn't a very good writer either. And we were using 21 sets at the time, radio sets, 21 sets at the time. And we hadn't set up line because we were not too far away. But in the sort of jungle area around Chittagong, reception was not too good. And we'd fired on a number of targets, and the colonel sort of said, "Now, your troops are there. I'm going to empty the guns on the targets 400 yards in front of you." as though you don't attack that particular target, we've got to neutralise it for you. And there were four guns. And he said, empty guns, target, act one. Now, the bombardier read the instructions wrong, and he gave out the line, the angle of sight, the range, the type of ammunition. Target, act one, empty guns. Now, unfortunately, that target happened to be this side of our own troops. And the colonel was pointing, that's where the shells were landed, and there were bang to the left, and my word. There were some funny games after that, I can tell you.
So
there's no harm done.
It
could have been nasty if there had been any troops about. I mean, it was just a tactical exercise, was it? It's one of those things which never should have happened, but did happen. And then we had a peculiar situation where all the men in the regiment were medically examined by the MO. We thought this was strange, because although you have the occasional inspection, you don't normally have a full medical check, but this was a full medical check for the whole regiment. And then we were told that three troops would be allocated to special services. Even at that stage, we didn't know what was going on. And we moved up into the area, northern Burma, a place called Lanagat. And then we learned that we were going to be part of the Chindit campaign, and we would eventually fly in with our 25 pounders into the strongholds which Wingate had stressed were extremely important in strangling the Japs' advance, blowing up ammunition dumps and the like, blowing railway bridges. We trained at Lanagat. There were one or two useful small hills about where we hauled the guns up by using drag ropes and hand spikes to push them up, sweating and toiling. And then
this was artillery rather than infantry training.
This is artillery, yes, with the 25 pounders. And we spent quite some days doing that. And then we were told that, of course, when we went in, the guns would have to be stripped down to basic parts, because A, you couldn't get the gun through the door to the plane, the DC-3, the old Dakotas. And they'd have to be broken down and distributed again over the fuselage, because then there wouldn't be any particular weight in one spot in the plane. So it meant breaking taking the piece off, then the recuperator, then the shield, then the breech block, then the wheels, and finally leaving the carriage on its own. And they would always be taken down and put together again. And the knowledge that you would take it off, load it into the plane, when you finally landed in Burma, you've got to put it in again, perhaps under enemy fire. And so I happened to be the lieutenant